And so you ask, well, what is going on here? Why has so much value been created by this little magazine that is not well known? That is sort of being imported a little bit into the Semaphore model, but not on a weekly print basis, but on a 24/7 minute by minute digital basis.
Yeah. So let's talk about like the money, right? Rebooting Show is a weekly podcast where I have in-depth conversations with people who are building sustainable media businesses. I'm Brian Morrissey, and this week I'm joined by Justin Smith, a longtime media executive who is most recently the CEO of Bloomberg News. Justin, alongside co-founder Ben Smith, former NYT media columnist and editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed News, is launching today Semaphore, a global news brand that's backed with $25 million of private investment. A big takeaway from our discussion was around differentiation. How you differentiate a brand is different today than it was. There are many ways to differentiate, from the surface level of design to the product level, and of course, in mission. I think in a crowded media landscape, differentiation has both never been harder, but also never been more important. We talk about how Semaphore is unbundling the news article, solving for the trust deficit in news, and also the sequencing of a business model, as Semaphore is launching with an ad model before adding in subscriptions alongside events. As always, please send me your feedback. My email is bmorrissey@gmail.com. And if you like the episode, please leave it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, or a rating, hopefully a high one, on Spotify. Justin, very glad to do the podcast again. I think this is like the third or fourth I've done with you.
I love your podcast. I'm a big fan, and I've been a little bit in sort of stealth mode the last couple of months, but happy to be back on.
Okay, so we only have a half hour, but I don't want to cover the stuff that's already been covered. But very quickly, like, I think one of the big questions with Semaphore, and I'm so glad to see it. I mean, you just walked me through the product itself, and we'll get to that. But very quickly, what is the gap in the market exactly? Because I think a lot of people, and myself too, is like, well, I read the FT, I get The Economist, Bloomberg News, I have a subscription to, and various other publications out there that are getting me smart about what's happening in the world around me. Where's the gap exactly?
Listen, I think the gap is actually found when you talk to news consumers themselves, and you just have to look at the data, look at the research, and the level of frustration that news consumers have with their existing news ecosystem, even though you may like a lot of those brands and others may like those brands, is actually very, very high. People are screaming from the rooftops, we're tired of bias, we're tired of polarization, we're tired of editorial and news being blended with opinion. This whole thing started with all this social media distortion, and the news industry's response has been, you know, not generally that appealing to a lot of consumers. And so the idea of an incredibly, of a new high quality, totally independent, extremely transparent news brand that is responding to these concerns is really what set the mark, the gap that Semaphore is going to try to fill. Layered on top of the polarization and bias, of course, is this notion, the other huge problem amongst news consumers is this sense of information overload. You know, people are completely overwhelmed, and you can read story after story after story, and if you want to be well-informed, you literally could spend your whole day doing so. And very few of the existing quality international global news brands actually make it their business to try to solve that information overload for their readers as well by actually reading everything, distilling things, and packaging that information with our own original content in a very kind of novel and new way. So in a sense, it's bringing transparent news to these frustrated consumers. It's totally separating out news from analysis from opinion. And then it's bringing in from a range of intelligent sources, a whole range of competing distilled views that actually, you know, save time for the consumer and offer a much more, much richer, much more kaleidoscopic news experience than they're getting from traditional news media.
Yeah, one of the things that I find really interesting is how you launch a brand now and what type of brands it is versus 5, 7, 10 years ago. So, I mean, you launched Quartz, right? So like, you know, and in some ways, like, I think there's some similarities in that when Quartz was, it was a different era and it was a different approach, but it was going after think broadly something kind of similar, right? But like the way you're going about it is completely different.
Yeah.
Explain the thinking here, because like, you know, I forget when Quartz launched, all the years blend
2011,
together. 2011. I knew it was around this.
I mean, Quartz was different in a very significant way, because Quartz was really targeting a very narrow business and financial global audience. It was entering into that specific space that the FT or the Economist occupied at the time. Obviously, it went in a different direction over a while. So there was sort of a fundamental kind of editorial difference, whereas Semaphore is really going after a premium general interest audience, but globally as well. You know, I mean, there's so many differences to obviously how we launch Quartz to how we're launching Semaphore. I think the rise of newsletters, honestly, has been a kind of a big change in the last 10 years. And even though newsletters in some ways in 2022, you know, I think it was 2 years ago that people wrote about Peak Newsletter, or yeah, was it last year or 3 years ago? Even though it sort of feels like a kind of a well-trodden sort of publishing model, the reality is that newsletters in the news sector for news consumers kind of remain the most potent, most powerful way of actually connecting direct to new audiences, new subscribers. And that's been a very resilient form. And so Quartz, for instance, launched with one global newsletter, the Quartz Daily Brief, which did really, really well. Semaphore is launching actually with 8 and on a range of different subjects. One global newsletter called Flagship, which is going to be effectively a morning publication for cross-border thinkers around the world who don't want to read 10 different intelligence sources, but actually Semaphore will do the work for them and summarize and distill the most intelligent news around the world, to a whole range of newsletters focused on places like Washington, D.C., and the power and influence game in Washington, to a bunch of vertical newsletters around very specific verticals like business, technology, climate, media, obviously with Ben Smith. And in some ways, I think you tweeted this a couple of weeks ago, and I really thought it was really a smart observation, is in many ways, we're launching with a collection of niche verticals that mm-hmm. all kind of together are going to live in this, on this platform called Semaphore. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. I mean, primarily is because I think that's how consumers are looking to connect with specific subjects in specific areas. But as you will well know too, you know, the business model advantages of actually monetizing verticals as opposed to sort of broad horizontals make a lot of sense too. And so I think your tweet and your observation was really accurate.
Okay, so it seems pretty clear that, I mean, would you describe this as like a newsletter first approach? Because you're looking to, and we just walked through the product and everyone will see it by the time this is out.
Are you going to give your reaction, Brian?
I said I was going to give it to you. I'll give it to you after you answer this question, because I need more information. I'm still...
I got to interrupt first, because it is we're definitely not a newsletter first.
Okay, that's why I wanted to add. That's what I wanted to ask. Because I think what we're seeing now, and the kinds of brands that are coming out, you know, a lot of them are leaning much more on newsletters, like, you know, as the heart of it. Like, so if you were look at the KPIs, it used to all be website KPIs, right? And like now, I think and for a lot of brands, it's more about having that direct connection. And we've gone over a million times why that's incredibly important. But I think in just going through the product, like I see what you guys are trying to do is balance a bunch of different things, right? The site is still important, but newsletters are still important. The individuals are very important. The photos are bigger and their names are bigger and stuff like this. But at the same time, the institutional brand is important. So first of all, is that accurate? And
That is accurate. Apologies for interrupting. Yeah. I think that we are a brand first launch, a multi-platform media brand first approach. We're launching with a number of different channels. Email is a really, really effective channel for the reasons you mentioned. It's also a great channel to start with, especially if you're starting with a new venture from scratch. It's a great way of amplifying that direct relationship between really, really strong journalists who have followings on social media, have followings, you know, based on their prior reporting, which we've hired an amazing group. Digital, you know, mobile web is a very important channel as well. Video is actually going to be a very important channel for us. We hired Joe Posner from Vox, who is the whiz there, who built, you know, I think one of the best and most dynamic video businesses for a news organization, Vox Explained series, et cetera. And we've already stood up, you know, some time ago, actually 6 months ago, we stood up Semaphore X, which is our live events business. And those are just the initial four channels that we're focused on. And we're going to be, you know, over time exploring others. We're not doing podcasts at the outset, as you may have noticed, but that's something which we will, you know, which we're exploring. So it's really, it's less about being, you know, a certain channel prioritized over others, and more about the sequencing of different channels and how effective various channels are at different stages of the growth of the business. And I think, you know, we're starting off with a pretty good base of newsletter subscribers today when we launch, and obviously none of these newsletters have actually been consumed by anyone. That's a really good and great advantage. And we're also starting with a really great cohort of advertisers that are going to be embedded into the platform from the very beginning too.
So first, good idea for skipping podcasts. I don't need Ben doing like a media podcast. So I wholeheartedly endorse that.
Step for podcast first company.
One of the things that there's always a pivot down the road. One of the things that you mentioned when we were walking through the product is differentiation, right? When you launch, you need to differentiate. And I actually wrote a piece, I think it was like a year or two ago, about the hierarchy of differentiation, because there's a lot of different ways to differentiate. And it's almost like harder now to differentiate, like, right? Like, you used to be able to differentiate, in particularly in the analog era, in a whole bunch of different ways, particularly on the packaging side. Now, from what I see of the product, you have a bunch of different differentiation. There's the Semaphore Yellow, I think we're trying to call it, sort of like your version of the salmon of the FT. But you're also trying to differentiate within the sort of product format, you know, and that's what you're calling Semaform. And I assume that is going to carry over beyond just text content into video and the other ways. Explain like how you guys were thinking about differentiation.
Well, differentiation for differentiation's sake is potentially a dangerous strategy. I think that the way that we went about this was that we really, really tried to think about the consumer and in 2022. And even though you opened up this podcast with, you know, glowing reports of satisfied news consumers loving, you know, all the great existing legacy newspapers, you know, there's a slightly different story. You know, there's, you know, people are pretty upset with, you know, the rise of advocacy journalism, for instance, on the left or the right. And it's kind of, you know, and it's to argue that we're not in a pretty polarized environment in this country and in other countries around the world. So it's incredibly hard to argue that information overload is not at kind of peak levels. So we really started first and foremost trying to understand these concerns, these frustrations, and then trying to build basically a product or a series of products that address those concerns. You know, newsrooms, premium journalism companies in the world aren't necessarily known for their consumer centricity around really, really listening to their customers that much. And for instance, one example of that is very few of the big global premium journalism brands will ever aggregate anybody else's content. That's a no-no. If you want to receive any content from us, it's going to be from our brand, even though there's an amazing series of stories on the same subject that you ought to know about. So anyway, so we started really with the consumer, and as we were solving those consumer problems with the product, that's when the sort of the constant overlay of differentiation is a really, really strong force for us. And so you have to be different. You have to be solving consumer problems. The way that we've say our differentiation is in a couple of different areas. It starts with, honestly, you know, the quality of the journalists and the quality of the original news. You know, remember, Semaphore is a breaking news model where, you know, we, you know, our growth and our future is going to be based on, you know, how much original, highly relevant, agenda setting news that we bring out into the world. And that's starting today. So that's obviously a huge source of differentiation, having original content that is of high quality and high relevance. The Semaphore you mentioned is probably the most significant kind of product differentiation that is also answering this consumer concern. And just for your audience, just to explain it, I mean, we learned through a lot of discussions with consumers that people view the sort of the traditional atomic unit of journalism, which is the 700 word article, as a bit of a black box. And that, you know, sometimes it's actually the article form itself is a source of confusion and a source of actually of the distrust that people feel, because people feel like they're being sort of sold a bill of goods. In the process of being information or news being conveyed, there's sort of framing, there's sort of the blending in of some analysis, there's a blending of opinion, and people end up feeling like they just can't trust a certain source, and then they go and look for alternative sources. So we decided that we would break down the article into its individual components and separate it into sections that would be completely transparent and exposed to the reader. We call it transparent journalism. And the idea is you'd start with the news or the facts or the scoop, which is the information that can't be really debated because it's objective news. And then we introduce a section called the reporter's view, which is actually allowing the reporter to actually analyze very openly to the reader. This is actually what this experienced reporter thinks of this subject. And then to the point I made earlier about distilling other sources, we then go and identify an alternative perspective from the reporter's view called room for disagreement, which we embed into our own article to show sort of a counterpoint, frankly, to our reporter's perspective. And finally, we anchor all of that at the end in a section called the view from, which is meant to provide global context. And is one of the theses of Semaphore is that in 2022, most, if not all, stories have or require some sort of global context or understanding. And so we're going to embed that into every story. So that's the Semaphore. And, you know, I think between the design, the Semaphore yellow, I think some of the other attention to design and other things, the Semaphore, the multi-platform approach, I think we're doing a lot of very different things. Will they all work? I'm sure some will and some won't. And Obviously this is a kind of a moving experiment of some sorts, like any startup should be. And so, you know, the minute we get reader feedback later today and across this week, we're going to be pouncing on that information, trying to see what's hitting, what's not hitting, and how we can evolve it in order to better serve these consumers.
Yeah, what I found interesting about the Semaphore is that it's kind of unbundling the article format. The 700-word article format has been around for a long time, and it really existed because of the constraints of analog. And it didn't really make sense in digital, but there's been some attempts to really change it. I think the way Axios has gone about its approach, I think it has some flaws. It gets a little monotonous in my view, but that's me. But I think what's interesting about this is there is like a lack of transparency that's always been built into the news article, because there's a lot of things that go on in the background that nobody sees. And I think just like there's a lack of trust in ad tech because of that, I think that leads to a lack of trust in journalism to some degree. You have an editor that you don't even know about who like wrote the headline and framing and stuff like this. I mean, in Digiday, a lot of times I was writing the leads and stuff. And so I would always say to reporters, look, if anyone ever complains, just blame me. Because a lot of times it was true.
No, it's also, I mean, the other kind of widespread behavior, I mean, we're, you know, the audience that we're targeting, you know, in our initial phase is going to be, you know, a combination of national and global, opinion leaders, thought leaders. We're starting with that sort of news omnivore who's reading lots of sources. We think there's a lot of frustration there. But one of the use cases that we picked up and over by studying these people is the use case of a reader reading a certain story from a single source, most likely in a 700-word inverted pyramid sort of black box article, beginning halfway through or towards the end to think, well, wait, what am I being sold here? And then having to like stop their news consumption process, go on to, you know, fire up their browser and then go and Google alternative perspectives to that story that they just read in one source. And we call it triangulating the news. People have become their own news triangulators, you know, they're like, I love the New York Times or I love this or that, but, you know, I just want a different perspective. And so for this group, I think the service that Semaphore is offering is going to be unique and unusual, which is we're going to triangulate the news for you. We're going to bring in ideological perspectives from the other side. We're going to bring in, you know, geographic perspectives. You know, and a lot of this, Brian, we knew each other back then too, was inspired by, you know, my time. It's now more than 20 years ago when I started The Week magazine in the US.
Yeah.
You know, which is really designed in a weekly print format to sort of distill the entire world's media to basically help people with information overload. And, you know, I tell a funny little story, which is, you know, The Week, a print magazine, The Week UK and The Week US, I think sold for $550 million in 2021. This is a news weekly print magazine selling for $550 million, which is five times the price that Mark Benioff paid for Time magazine, twice the price that Jeff Bezos paid for The Washington Post. And so you ask, well, what is going on here? Why has so much value been created by this little magazine that is not well known? Well, the answer is They're connected so deeply with their audience and their consumers because they're solving a problem they have. Mm-hmm. And I remember that the reader feedback we got at the week was just intense. People said, thank you, I'm drowning. And so a lot of the service that, you know, that provided is sort of being imported a little bit into the Semaphore model, but not on a weekly print basis, but on a 24/7 minute by minute digital basis. And so you'll see us leaning into that idea very, very strongly across the coming weeks and months.
Yeah. So let's talk about like the money, right? I think everyone is going towards the same direction for most models and having diversified models, but it's also where you begin. These days, more people are beginning with subscriptions. And there are advantages to that. There are trade-offs to that. You're starting with advertising. From what I've read, you plan on adding in subscriptions. There's obviously events. Explain how you're thinking through both the revenue model and also the sequencing.
Sure. Well, I guess if everyone's starting with subscriptions and we're starting with advertising, it's another example of differentiation.
Yeah, it's contrarian.
No, I think, first of all, there isn't just one way to do this. And I've been a huge admirer of this new crop of startups that are doing all sorts of interesting things. You know, Jessica Lessin, the Information, has just done an amazing job. And she's one of our investors and a great friend of Semaphore's. And obviously we're seeing, you know, obviously the Axios kind of, the rise of Axios has been just absolutely astounding and well executed. You know, our view is that starting with a hard paywall for a brand new brand and brand new journalism with a totally different journalistic format and proposition is a tough slog, especially if you're looking at building something with some scale. You know, I think it can make a little bit more sense in a niche market, but if you're looking to build a global news brand, if we started with a hard paywall, no one would really understand, have any time to really understand what the brand meant, what the product offering was. And so we felt very strongly that the initial phase of Semaphore really needed to be a phase of introducing the brand and the content and the journalism and these innovations I've been talking about to the target audience, developing a relationship, developing that engagement across these different channels. And we also felt that there, you know, because of the unique and innovative nature of what we're trying to do, because of the mission that we're pursuing, which is really to sort of restore quality, independent journalism in this somewhat broken market, that a lot of forward-thinking global marketers and brands would really want to align with that and align with that, not only because they want to reach the audience that we're reaching, but also because of the mission that we're undertaking. You know, I can't tell you the number of meetings with advertisers that I've had across the last 6 months where literally advertisers said, listen, thank you so much for doing this. You know, this is so needed in the world right now. And yeah, they're not going to buy advertising with us on the basis of that, but it was an important mm-hmm. part of it. So we have been really, really fortunate. We did a global roadshow. We met with 80 of the Fortune Global 100 companies at the C-suite level, working with our CRO, Rachel Oppenheim, who came from the New York Times. And you know, we're launching with 10 founding partners, some of the great brands in the world who are engaging with us on a number of different levels and advertising, on thought leadership, integrated partnerships. They're, you know, highly custom programs that, you know, some of which are 15 months long, some of which are 12 months long, some of which are 6 months long, very customized to each individual brand. And the promise to them, of course, is that we are innovating in a critical marketplace and into an audience that is, you know, of opinion leaders that they care tremendously about. All the advertisers largely are corporate brand advertisers, you know, so we're not necessarily working with the sort of the broad consumer advertising base, but you know, a whole range of companies from MasterCard to Verizon to, you know, Tata, the Indian company, to Chevron, to Pfizer, to Qualcomm, to Genesis and Hyundai, the Korean car company. So a really, really blue chip group. And, you know, they're going to be integrated into our platform in a bunch of very, very creative ways that we'll be talking about in the coming, that people will see, but they'll also be talking about in the coming weeks.
Yeah. So final thing is, are a lot of these dipping into like the corporate, like, I forget the corporate like affairs budgets that, you know, the advertisers in Axios, Politico, Punchbowl, and like a lot of the, I mean, there's so many. I didn't think Washington, D.C. would ever be the hotbed of like media innovation, but like, you know, you go where the money is.
You see them in the New York Times and Bloomberg too. I mean, and you also saw them in my other alma mater, The Atlantic. You know, I mean, that was The Atlantic was really built in a lot of this ad base as well. Listen, it's a really interesting story. Actually, I think Peter Kafka wrote a piece recently about it, which is it's the rise of corporate brand marketing really in this country, which used to be sort of a niche market, but really has grown as companies have found the need, the imperative urgency around telling their corporate brand story. As companies have been held more accountable by a broader range of stakeholders about their role in the world, about their environmental footprint, about their social footprints, et cetera. So yes, a big part of our initial advertising model, given the target audience I mentioned, is from that category.
Right. And it's a little bit protected in that you're not totally competing on a DR basis with like a Google and Facebook and stuff.
It's much more akin to a business-to-business kind of advertising market than it is to a broad consumer market. And I think, and this goes back to your prescient tweet a few weeks ago, which is, if you're launching with eight verticals that reach deep into the opinion leader segment of business and finance and technology and climate and Washington, the business model proposition is, as you say, it's sort of a disaggregated B2B niche model, all sort of sitting on top of a general interest platform. And I think that's potentially an innovation too, in terms of how we're thinking about it.
Yeah. All right, Justin, we're going to leave it there. I want to revisit this in 6 months or at least a year, because things will change.
We didn't even get to talk about our events business, which is another.
I know, but like we don't know, we're out of time. I'm happy to go into the events business. But I mean, I remember when you were at Bloomberg, starting the alternative Davos, it seems like you're going to be going in that direction a little bit with this too.
Yeah, we've got a great events plan in place. Coming out of COVID, and again, because I've been talking to so many of these clients the last number of months, I can't tell you the number of times people have said, Justin, I can't believe today I had 12 clients call me and they all had the same question. I need a live event proposal. and so whether that's a psychological thing that is as a result of people being cooped up and feeling the need to sort of socialize again, or whether it's actually sort of a media mix shift into experiential, I don't know, but it's just an interesting thing.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay. Justin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening this week. We will be back next week with a new episode. The Rebooting Show is produced by Pod Help Us. Podcasts are a great way to expand your client base. Pod Help Us lets you focus on having engaging conversations, giving your brand the full stack of services needed for a professional look and sound. Start your podcast today at podhelp.us.